Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight's show, Life Rattle number 1276, features three stories by new Life Rattle writer Christy Rodenberg. Christy Rodenberg was born in 1993 on a summer evening in Sarnia, Ontario. Her father emigrated from Holland in his 20s and met her mother 15 years later. Her father will always be a dairy farmer and her mother a teacher. When Christy was midway through kindergarten, the family moved from Sombra to a new farm near the hamlet of Corinth, both located near the most southern tip of Ontario. Growing up, Christy and her three younger siblings spent many hours playing outside on the lawn or in the pool, but also many inside playing with dinosaurs or reading books. Christy Rodenberg currently studies art at university and goes back to the farm every summer. She enjoys camping with her family and friends, collaging, reading novels, and taking photographs of the rural landscape she calls home. There is an earthiness to Christy's writing, and her stories, though simple and straightforward, have real substance. Two of tonight's featured stories introduce readers to a world few have experienced firsthand, life on a family-run farm. And although the daily activities are quite different from those of urban dwellers, the characters we meet face similar dilemmas. Tonight's first story centers on a young woman who struggles to feed a newly acquired calf. We feel her frustration and exasperation as her various methods prove unsuccessful. Let's listen now as Christy Rodenberg reads her story, Calf Bully, tonight on Life Rattle.
Calf Bully by Christy Rodenberg. I stomp my black rubber boots and step up into the milking parlor in the old section of the barn of our family farm in Corinth, Ontario. I stand between the two metal pipes above the stairs to the pit and tug on the belt loops of my faded jeans. I watch Dad attach a milker onto a sagging jersey udder. He turns and grins. Hi, Christy. Hey. I pass down a black and a white pail. Dad balances the wide, shiny can in his calloused hand and fills each pail halfway. Michael picked up two heifers from Reuben today for the mega hut. They can't drink out of a pail, so you get to help them. Look for number 43. He flops the lid back onto the can. And 46. Okay. The mega hut sits to the right of our short row of calf hutches, a large, white, plastic structure surrounded by a lopsided rectangle of mismatched gates. I drag my boots through the gravel, and two calves rush to the fence. I check their white ear tags. 46 and 43. Perfect. I set the white pail down, and in one motion, lift the black pail and my leg over the wire gate. My pants stretch at the crotch as I swing my other leg. Number 46, a Holstein with two black speckles on her nose, nudges me. I place two fingers in her mouth and push her nose into the pail. Her teeth dig into my fingers, but she drinks without much spilling. When she finishes, I toss the empty black pail over the fence and lift the half-full white one. The contented heifer headbutts me and slides her raspy tongue along my arm and my shit-stained soccer camp t-shirt. The other calf I have to feed, number 43, has more black markings on her forehead. As I approach her, she bolts into the mega hut. She fidgets on the opposite side of a faded green manger. I shuffle through the straw toward her. Her hooves thud and scrabble against the mega hut's wall, and she skedaddles back outside. This one's a real winner, I think, as I follow her outside. I catch her and thrust my body against her, pressing her into the side of a rusty gate. I try to lift the white pail up to her nose. It wobbles in my hand. The heifer jerks her head upward, and the pail's metal handle pinches my fingers. The other calf nuzzles my side. Strings of slobber stick to my shirt. Yuck! I remove my soggy hand from the calf's chin and lift the pail high. I spring over the fence, set the pail in the grass, and jog across the gravel into the feed room. I peer around the mixer. My brother Andrew closes the hanging door to the high-moisture corn silo. I shout over the sound of conveyors. Hey, bud, can you do me a favor? One sec, he calls back. I tread around the dusty mixer. This calf won't drink, and the other one's all over me. I think she's still hungry. Can you hold her off while I try to get some milk into stupid? All right. He turns the conveyors and mixer off and follows me out through the garage door. We hop the gate, and Andrew plants himself in front of the speckled heifer. I straddle stupid. I dig my knees into her furry neck, and with my right hand, force her face into the pail. She jerks wildly. She doesn't drink. I push my body down on her neck. I wrap my right arm around her head. I poke and massage her throat. The milk bubbles. She doesn't swallow. Fucker, I think. I never say that word out loud. Milk slops out of the pail. My wrist bends too far. It's for your own good, dumbass. You need to drink. I lower the pail as she gasps for air. Wow, Andrew scoffs as he pushes his calf away from the milk in my pail. Again, I thrust Stupid's muzzle into the milk. 5 seconds later, I let up. She bucks her head and kicks her legs. I stop trying to sit on her and let her run. Andrew's calf clambers to join her behind the mega hut. What a dumbass, I say. Large splotches of milk darken my jeans. She won't suck on your fingers? Andrew asks. I spend all my time forcing her head into the pail. I don't have enough hands to get her to suck on my fingers, too. I wipe my slippery hand on my t-shirt. I nod to Andrew, and we sneak around the mega hut. Stupid runs. I shout at her. Don't you want to drink? Again, I push her against a fence and lock my knees around her neck. She twitches her head, and my fingers slip along her slimy muzzle. Black and white hairs rub off her face and into the milk. I really just want to dump all the milk on her head. I drop the white pail into the dirt. Don't waste it, Andrew says. I look down at the half-full pail. Yeah, my back hurts. Let's go. This is a waste of time. Okay. I stand up and stretch my arms. I was totally wrestling her. That is not how this usually goes. We hop the gate. I pick up the empty black pail I had tossed over the fence earlier. I inhale a shocked laugh. I think she's scared of me now.
That was Calf Bully, written and read by Christy Rodenberg. Tonight's second story brings us on to sun-drenched fields, where four siblings work together to bring in the day's final loads of straw. But one brother veers off track when he decides to prove his driving ability, despite the protests of his siblings. Let's listen now as Christy Rodenberg reads her story after bailing.
After Bailing by Christy Rodenberg. My knees jolt as the flatbed wagon hits a pothole in the straw field. My brother Andrew pitches forward on top of the tower of little square bales behind me. Careful, Amy, I yell over the loud mechanical bangs of the massy baler. Amy peers over her shoulder from the cab of the John Deere tractor she drives. She grins. As the youngest kid, she gets the easy job of operating the tractor. She turns back to steering, looking back frequently to align the yellow teeth in the front opening of the baler with the long golden line of straw. I lean against the bale stack. I wipe my salty nose on the neckline of my white farm safety t-shirt, adding to the brown stains in the fabric. As the bales pop up the baler chute, inch by inch, I lean over the gap between the baler and the wagon, grip the strings of the bales, heave them up to Andrew, and pray that I don't drop one of them on my head. Andrew grasps the orange strings and wedges the bales up high. Last row, I shout to Amy as I gesture to the next straggling straw row on the ground to our right. Amy cranks the big black steering wheel. The red baler and the wagon arch. I survey the half-empty field, squint at the Bosma's peeling barns and the weedy truck graveyard behind them. I tilt my face into a faint breeze and close my eyes to block out the dust and sunlight. We pick up the last row and cram the bales into the front corners of our full wagon. I sit on top of the stack and Andrew fills what little space is left. Amy puts her foot on the clutch and the tractor halts. The baler's rhythmic thumps and bangs and the revs of the tractor slow and then stop. Andrew jumps off the wagon. Amy points to the road. We watch our brother, Michael, on the Massey Ferguson tractor, chug down Best Line. He bumps through the ditch, turns onto the wheat stubble, and drives towards the parked rack wagon we loaded earlier. Amy joins me at the top of the 11-bale-high stack of straw. Andrew adjusts the baler's alignment, climbs into the John Deere, and drives around the Bosma's empty barns and down their long driveway. Amy and I duck under the hydro wires that cross in front of Mrs. Bosma's house. We turn left onto Best Line. In the field beside us, Michael turns his tractor around and heads back to the ditch. My 15-year-old brother takes pride in his tractor-driving abilities. Andrew stops the John Deere and shouts to Michael. Dad said to go around behind the barns. Use the Bosma's driveway. Michael frowns. I stare down at him. Take the driveway, all right? He flashes a grin. I don't need to. Don't be stupid. Just go around. His eyebrows furrow. Come on. Dad said so. Amy pleads from the top of the bale stack. The Massey roars, and Michael shouts, Move. Michael, I say, do what Dad says. Andrew shouts from the tractor, You'll get stuck. Michael scowls and sets his jaw. Andrew shouts after him, Michael, stop. The load's too heavy. Just go around. It doesn't take that much longer. My sweaty face grows hotter. Amy screams as I do, You're being stupid. Michael lets off the clutch, and the tractor jumps forward. Fine, Andrew screams. He puts the John Deere into gear, and we pull away. The Massey powers through the weedy ditch, but the rack wagon cannot make it. Michael's tractor stands diagonally across Best Line. A green pickup and a little silver car brake and start to honk their horns. Michael revs the tractor repeatedly. Amy turns and points to the smoke rising from the Massey. Her big blue eyes grow even larger. We told him so. Once home, we disconnect the wagon in the drive shed, and Andrew parks the John Deere. He runs into the barn to find Dad. Amy and I trudge to the house. We can't wait to jump into the clear blue swimming pool behind our house. As we open the garage door, we see Dad walking out of the shop with a big toe chain.
That was After Baling, written and read by Christy Rodenberg. In her final story tonight, Christy brings us on vacation, where a mother and aunt torment a self-conscious girl with their boisterous rendition of a children's song. Let's listen now as Christy Rodenberg reads her story, Skinnamarinky-Doo. Please note, tonight's final story may result in a terribly annoying song playing through your head for an extended period of time. Listener discretion is advised.
Skinnamarinky-Doo by Christy Rodenberg. I drain dirty water from the dish tub into the straggly grass behind Aunt Helen's tent trailer. Amy and Andrew cycle to the playground through Alzora, our campsite group in Port Burwell Provincial Park. I hear their training wheels bump and grate on the pavement. Aunt Helen and Mommy lounge beside the empty fire pit and tip their faces back to soak up the morning sunlight. I slide the dish tub under the tarp onto the picnic table and sink into a faded chair next to Mommy. I move her Agatha Christie book onto another chair. Up for campfire songs tonight? Aunt Helen tilts her head toward me. Do you know any? Skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink. Those don't sound like real words to me. Aunt Helen sings. Skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink. Mommy shifts her weight. She picks up the tune. Skidamarink-a-doo. I love you. Skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink. Skidamarink-a-doo. I love you. Aunt Helen's mouth forms a big round O as she points her finger at my chest. I hunch my shoulders and squeeze my hands between my thighs. Skidamarinky-Doo? That's silly. I hear murmurs and occasional yells from the other Port Burwell campers. I smell bacon from a family's campsite. Energetic kids yell as they pass by on their bikes. Occasional snores come from the couple's site behind us. I groan. Skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink, skidamarink-a-doo. I love you. Skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink, skidamarink-a-doo. I love you. I jolt from my chair. No, shh, I say. People hear. Just doing my job as a parent, Mommy laughs. I edge through the dewy grass towards the signpost on the corner of Site 81. Broken stalks of grass stick to the toes of my sneakers. I pick up my bike and scramble to set the pedals. Mommy and Aunt Helen start on the bridge, and their raised voices echo through the treetops. I love you in the morning and in the afternoon. I love you in the evening and underneath the moon. I bump up the ditch, my back to the fire pit and my singing relatives. My knees move quickly. I stand over my bike's saddle. I pump my legs. Mommy and Aunt Helen roar. Oh, skidamarink-a-dink-a-dink, skidamarink-a-doo. Just before the bend in the road, I turn onto a root-covered trail and bounce towards the quiet of a bordering parking lot. I love you.
That was Skinnamarinky-Doo, written and read by Christy Rodenberg. That concludes Life Rattle number 1276. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Christy reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune in next Thursday night to hear more new stories.